If you're as old as I am, you remember the song as a great party hit. As a matter of fact, it started out as a gospel song, and then Ramsey Lewis turned the volume up on that. Ramsey Lewis is on piano here, and this is his famous interpretation of Wade in the Water, the title track of his 1966 album, with John Avant on trombone, Cleveland Eaton on bass, and Maurice White, yes, of Earth, Wind, and Fire on drums. This song won a Grammy for, this tune, I should say, won a Grammy for Best R&B. So there you are. A good way to start the program today. A lot of energy, I'm hoping, that we will get from you as we make our way through a number of topics, as we've begun to do. It's working nicely, and I'm getting very good reactions from it. People are enjoying it, being put on the spot and answering questions. But the difference is that we're looking for analysis, not opinion, but analysis. And the analysis is meant to get us used to the idea of putting things together, stringing facts that may seem unrelated, but in fact, they do paint a picture, and you are going to select those facts. You are going to put a narrative together based on these facts that you lace together, and then you come up with the big picture. And that is what we don't do enough of. And I like the idea of encouraging you to be analytical. It's one thing to have an opinion, it's another thing to be analytical, because when you're being analytical, you're taking a step or two back from the story, and you are putting pieces of it together that aren't already together, but you're putting pieces of it together in order to understand and interpret our reality. And this is a skill that is really, really important. We are used to, because this is what the media organizations do, we are used to having the picture painted for us. We are used to being told what to think. And seldom do we disassemble that very narrative and come up with different ideas and different interpretations. And when we do, sometimes we startle ourselves that this, in fact, is what we can see, despite the fact it isn't presented to us. Many stories, every single day, they tell you and me what the story is. And then you say, okay, well, thanks very much. But when you take a little step backward and you use the same information to look at the story in a different way, you're going to get an entirely different view. And it is the view that comes with analysis. All righty. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We'll see who's on the line, who's willing to go first. Nobody ever wants to go first, but there's got to be a first. Somebody's got to go first. This one is fairly easy. Fairly easy. So I give you that as a as incentive to call. And you don't have to be afraid of making a mistake. There's no such thing here. It is just training and retraining ourselves to think about things differently. And that way, if you do that often enough, you are not an easy target of brainwashing. You're not an easy target. So the idea is to develop in ourselves the capacity to resist conditioning, people telling you what to think, telling you what the story is, but not answering the essential questions. Haven't we discovered that in just a short time that we've been doing this exercise, which is an exercise in media literacy, really? But it ups the ante in that you are now taking on the added responsibility of deciphering the information that we are all fed, and you're picking and choosing what makes sense and what does not make sense, what you feel that you need to know that is not being said, not being told. That brings us to a whole different level of the media. All right, we have one brave soul starting off, and that's Ma'at. Hello, Ma'at, you're on the air.
Hi, greetings to the beloved family.
All right, thank you. So the clue here is from 40 to 60, says Gallup.
Oh,
From
I know what
40
that is.
to 60, says Gallup.
Yeah. Well, Gallup, of course, is the prominent polling agency. And it's around the approval and disapproval of the population to Trump, and that is 60% disapproval and 40% approval.
Okay, so you've just given us the facts as we've all been given. Now, go the next step and interpret these facts.
Well, sometimes you wonder how they take these polls because someone is as foolish and idiotic and off kilter, the way you would say. You wonder about that 40%. He's a dangerous.
Oh, but you see now, right away, you're off track because what are you doing now that you're not supposed to do when you're doing analysis?
Well, I'm just saying that it's somewhat surprising as to how they come up with and who they connect with as to how they determine those figures.
Okay. But you're still in the realm of opinion. I want you to take a dispassionate view on this simple premise from 40% to 60%. How could you help us make sense of that statistic without opining? We're not looking for opinion. We're looking for you to interpret those facts.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at, but are you saying like what's been happening as to how he's treating people trying to claim asylum, his overall general behavior towards everyone and everything after the midterms, is that what you're asking me to connect it to?
No, I'm not. I'm just asking you to take exactly what the facts are as presented and reinterpret these facts so that they become something other than a statement that Gallup says this is what we found. 40% don't like him, didn't like him, and now it's up to 50, 60%. What would you say is a reasonable interpretation of that?
The reasonable interpretation is that he's pretty unpopular.
It's unpopular, yes. And what does this mean?
What does it mean? That his chances for 2020 is not looking too good.
That's a good interpretation. that here's a president who is in his second year of office, started off very, very popular, pulled off essentially a kind of miracle win coming from behind, spectacular efforts made at reaching out to the community and reaching out to his base and so forth. And yet we see from the Gallup Institution, which is, you know, it's regarded highly as a polling institution, it is saying that 6 out of 10 Americans at this point do not give the president high marks. Interpret.
You trees, I'm not sure. Let me let somebody else come okay. in and take it to the next level. Okay,
see
thank
how
you.
Difficult it is. It seems very simple, doesn't it? It's a very simple thing. But to interpret it, because we are not used to interpreting things, we are used to being told what the interpretation is. And this is what I'm trying to get people to take it on themselves to interpret things. Thank you, though. You got us started, and you made a couple of points here as well. Sharif, was with us. He's no longer with us. 888-874-4888. A simple thing like that. A simple thing like that. From 40% to 60%. Okay. We can easily interpret what that means. It means that more people don't like Donald Trump than we are led to believe. But how do we interpret this? That's the question. It sounds simple, but it really isn't. All right, so then let me go on to another topic. And let's see how you interpret these facts. Are you up to it? You know, this, I find this very amusing because we are not used to exercising our own brains. Even as something as simple as this, from 40% to 60%, okay, what does that mean? From your own perspective, what does that mean? And I'm expecting a non-institutional answer when you interpret these facts. Okay. 888-874-4888. I'm going to just now introduce a whole new topic, and that is showdown in Mississippi. Showdown in Mississippi. Who will take that subject on? Come on, you got to be brave. It's not about whether you're right or wrong, but you got to be brave. Bruce from New York, showdown in Mississippi.
All right. What does it mean to me?
Well, interpret the phrase. Tell us what they say it is about, and tell us, from your perspective, what it really is about.
Well, they say is about the extent to which they can judge racism still viable as a Trump arrow, right? That's what they say it means, right? But what I think it means is that is a confirmation that racism has not gone anywhere.
There's a very specific reference to showdown in Mississippi today. What is it?
Well, is the risk between this guy who was Clinton's agricultural secretary, I can't remember his name,
Mike Espy.
Mike Espy, and a woman who, I can see a picture, but I don't know her name.
Cindy Hyde Smith.
Yeah, Cindy Hyde Smith in Mississippi today. That is what it means.
Right. There's this race being run today in Mississippi that is attracting an extraordinary amount of attention. It's a race between former Agricultural Secretary Mike Espy and Cindy Hyde Smith, vying for the Senate seat in Mississippi. The race has been fraught with racial overtones, and therefore, why is this an important race?
Well, I think I said it just now, because there's a perception, not necessarily misguided, that Trump relies on racism, and that Mississippi is the bastion of racism on one of his main state support.
Well, it is fraught with racism, but we have to insist on tying it to Trump, because he has what? How has he figured into this race?
Yeah, because he has obviously used. But he won Mississippi by, I imagine, a large amount in his presidential campaign, and Mississippi is seen as one of his strong areas.
Yes.
So people
who are campaigning,
Democrats want to
he has campaigned yes. strongly for Cindy Hyde Smith.
Right. Well, the Democrats want to measure the extent of which they want to use this as a barometer to measure the extent of which they can convince people who voted against them last time to the extent to which they're coming back to the Democratic camp.
Okay. But in a very real sense, does this race matter at all? Should it matter this much? More
no,
than
it
any
should not.
Other regular political race?
No, it should not. I think it's just, to me, it's just like a horse and pony show. I think the result is predetermined. That's what's happening. I don't think it should matter, but I think the media is making a hullabaloo about it. It's a non-story,
yes.
In other words.
But what is the significance of this race? You still haven't told us.
Well, I thought I did just now. I think the significance is the extent to which racism as a political device is strong in Mississippi.
Okay. All right. Thanks for getting us started on that topic.
What?
Okay, go ahead. I heard, but. Are you there, Bruce? Okay. Let's see if anybody else wants to tackle that question. Sharif from Queens, would you want to tackle that question?
First of all, I would say good afternoon, and I sincerely hope your health continues to improve.
Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Mary talked about your condition a little while ago, so I'm very keen on that. Now, what would you like me to respond to?
Well, we're talking about this race in Mississippi. What is the significance of this race between Cindy Hyde Smith and Mike Espy vying for the Senate seat there?
Oh, the significance is, and I'm going to try to be objective about this, it can either increase the margin that the Republicans have in the Senate, or it can have to decline just a little bit. You know, as we move closer and closer to, we're already in fascism. That's when the government and business come together. So we're in fascism. A lot of people aren't aware of that and realize it. So if the Republican win, that gives him a little more of a little space, so to speak. If she lose, that tells him where the trend is going. Now, and people in the government, the Republicans, they realize we're moving towards fascism real quick, you know. And some of them, it's a lot they disagree with, but they don't want to break the party alliance or unity. So they're going along with it. Now, when something very close come up or something very important that this guy want to get past, the guy in Washington, that margin or how would you say it, the margin of majority they have is getting very thin. So that'll thin it out a little bit. Now, I just would like to add this. That 40 to 60, what that indicates is that when the majority disagree like that, that means that a change is, the people want to change, and that's what that means. So it means that we're, what, 6-4? And that's going to increase as this guy's fascist decisions keep rising, because all these people here, except the native people, are immigrants, and they kidnap the so-called, I say so-called because that's not African. Africa is the name of Leo and Serpio Africana, two Italian explorers, and they put their name on our continent. So the people that come from there, they were kidnapped and brought here. So
all right, even you're off mark now.
I'm getting off a little bit, yeah.
I want you to stay straight on the topic. What is the significance of the fact that the president has gone from, according to Gallup, from 40% to 60% disapproval rating? But you gave us a good shot. Thank you so much. Thanks for contributing today. Thank you. Joe from New York, what is it about this race that we need to pay attention to, this race in Mississippi between Cindy Hyde Smith and Mike Espy?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief.
Hello.
First time calling, long time listening.
Oh, good for you. Thanks so much. Glad you could join us today. So you know what your task is. There is this race going on in Mississippi. It is fraught with a lot of tension. You will tell us why this race is so important and what some of the most critical aspects are that we should be paying attention to, why this race is being run.
Regarding the race in Mississippi, I don't have too much to say about it. But I was calling in order to speak about the 40% to 60%.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
We have created this man out of nothing. He was not a politician. Now he runs the highest office in the land. The American people put them there. So now, instead of keeping him, bashing him, which in the bigger picture is going to be worse for the country and for him, we should use reverse psychology and help him. He needs help.
Right, but I want an analysis. You have to be analytical here, not necessarily offering an opinion, but giving us an analysis.
I'll give you another point of view. Do you recall when a kid who goes to all the grades and graduate from high school and cannot even read a book? Do you recall that?
But I have to bring you back to where we are in our discussion. Our discussion is that we have to focus on analysis. And analysis is not opinion, but dealing with the facts as presented to us, what would you say is a more accessible way to interpret these facts? They have the polling organization, which is considered the leader in its field, the Gallup organization. They've come out with a poll. The poll shows that the disapproval
Hello?
Represents a dramatic climb in that it is a 60% as opposed to the last poll they did showing a 40% disapproval rate. How do you interpret this?
the one way to interpret it is to say that the man did not prove to be consistent in all his rhetoric and all that he promised he would do as far as like helping, you know, the American people to get where they need to be. After 2 years in office, all these promises goes back to the same to rhetoric, not facts, not genuine delivery. That is why, it, like every other president that came before him, they were in the same situation. It's not that I'm approving of what's been he's been doing or he's been saying.
Oh, we understand. We understand. But
okay,
what is the point of what? How do you analyze these numbers? What meaning do they have for us in terms of the way you interpret it?
Well, these numbers show that the majority of the people who put him in office is they're turning their back on him because promises have not been kept. It's the same repeat from day one of all the fact that he's involved with the Russians, the fact that he's involved with a whole bunch of other things. All these things, it's the same repeat that you hear in the news, and the fact that he's fighting constantly, he's tweeting constantly, he's not doing the job that he was put there to do, because he goes on the sideline, always on the sidebar, like arguing, debating on non-essential things. So the people are they're fed up with it. So that is why his approval rating went all the way down to 40%.
Oh, it's actually all the way up to 60%, according to Gallup. But thank you so much. Thank you very much for your contribution today, and welcome aboard. Let's hear from you more often. Marcus from Wisconsin, what have you to say about either of the topics in play right now? The face-off in Mississippi and Trump's startling disapproval rating.
First of all, thank you. I am always very grateful to be in your illuminated company, even if it's only over the telephone.
Did I fool you?
one learns so much in your presence, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
One of the propaganda ploys of American media is to get people to not consider events in the light of their principles, but on the basis of information only. So you are supposed to be an obsessive fact collector and come up with some shining fact that will provide an answer. A fact is meaningless by itself. It's only meaningful when you compare it to other facts. So let's take the 60-40 split in the current poll. Polling data is only significant if you're measuring approval and disapproval, which is a very overgeneralized idea. Approval of what? Disapproval of what? There's no specifics. It's just sort of a global generalization. And the question to ask is, what does the approval or disapproval translate into actual practice? What does it change?
But that's not the question.
Well, sure. What does it
giving
mean
us a philosophical answer? What we want is interpretation, even if it negates or omits some of the, you know, the very salient facts and important considerations. I'm just saying, here's a poll.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows a dramatic increase in the disapproval of Donald Trump. It's conducted by, like I said, it's conducted by the a reputable organization. Mm-hmm. Has been doing they've been doing polling for a long time. I'm just saying, let us stop a moment to interpret the results of the poll. We're not going to concern ourselves with the methodology used and the computation of results or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's a straight issue of, here's a poll that was done. It's the most recent poll that Gallup has done on Donald Trump's performance as president. Mm-hmm. And this is the finding. The finding is that the last time when they did a poll, he was at 40% disapproval. This time that they've done the poll, he's now at 60% disapproval. How are we to interpret these numbers?
I would interpret it in light of all the other polls that are out there. Does it affect objective circumstances? In other words, if the population disapproves in large numbers, does that translate into a changed reality? And the answer is no, it does not. Polling against our invasion of Iraq has been in the upper 90 percentile against for 15 years. Has that changed the objective circumstances? No, of course it hasn't. The polling data has shown consistently for 5 years now that the approval rating of Congress, regardless of who's in there, is around 6%. In almost statistical error. Communism, venereal disease rates higher. Does that
change but we're not
the
discussing
objective circumstances?
We're not
no,
discussing
it's not.
Polling. We're not discussing polling as such. We're discussing a specific finding that has been issued by a major polling organization. This is what they've been doing all their lives as an organization, and this is what they found. Now, how do we interpret that? Rather, we're not looking for a philosophical answer. We're looking for a basic understanding of how people presented with this information might interpret it. And the average person will not go where you just went to discuss
polling. I thought that's what you were criticizing.
The average person doesn't deal with that. And not even this president deals with it that way. He's obsessed with polls. So let's say then, to Donald Trump, what would this mean? What does it mean to the average person that there's such a dramatic skyrocketing of disapproval, according to Gallup?
The approval is only meaningful, or disapproval is only meaningful, if it means that the disapproval or approval has some effect. It doesn't. People can disapprove of Donald Trump in very high numbers, and if the system wants him there, he will be there. It's based on the illusion that all this data, the 60-40 splits, for instance, that the population's opinion matters to how the society looks. It does not. It's just a diversion. It's expectation management. This has nothing to do with
reality. So in other words,
we
should not pay attention to this poll.
You can pay attention to it. It's an interesting number. But what does it mean in terms of affecting circumstances? And the answer is zero.
That's what we're asking. And we're going around the same circle. Okay, I grant you everything that you have said, because there's merit to your argument. We don't know what questions were asked. We don't know how they tabulated the results. We don't know what population was polled. Is it the same population that was polled in the previous poll that produced a 40% disapproval rating that now produces a 60% disapproval rating. All of these questions are very important. I'm still asking a basic question. Mm-hmm. Irrespective of the fine details of, you know, the upside and downside of polls, all the things that polls may or may not be good for, but this is significant. It's a significant poll in the sense that people pay attention to polls. We have an organization whose reputation is about conducting polls. And this is an update of a recent poll that they did that showed dramatic increase in disapproval. All right. Notwithstanding all of the points that you've made, and they're quite legitimate, I'm not going to argue against that. I'm still saying, how would you interpret the poll numbers?
I would interpret the poll numbers to mean that they are targeted mainly at voters who dislike Trump, to give them the impression, because it's based on the myth that their disapproval will change things, that their disapproval is being recognized by the media and the system itself, and that they're terribly worried about this disapproval. Of course, that's false, but the population doesn't know that. They believe that their disapproval has some meaning to the people in power. Now, that's the object of it, as far as I can see. It's simply more of what media actually does, is manage the expectations of the people who might be dissatisfied with the way things are. It accomplishes two things. It keeps them from actually organizing around the project of changing it themselves. It makes them think, see, the system is accommodating you. See, they're deeply affected by your disapproval.
You're going way deeper than I think we should. It is a very straight thing. All of you that you've said, I mean, these questions have hounded the industry of polling since time began. People just have all kinds of objections and mistrusts of polls. And they're legitimate. They are legitimate. However, they do serve as an indicator for society. And we have any number of ways in which polls are used to control, yes, but polls also are used in a more legitimate way to indicate change of people's opinions about things. So polls are used for all kinds of reasons. I'm saying here, with this, I'm not suggesting that, you know, we ought to believe 100% in the integrity of this poll, but we have no reason to disbelieve it. This is an organization that does polling. And it is interesting that this organization, which found 40% disapproval the last poll they took, now finds 60% disapproval. That ought to mean some kind of thing. And I'm interested in helping us understand, what is it that you think it ought to mean? We're not discussing polling as a service or as a science or anything like that. We're talking about, here is a definitive change. You can't deny it. This is a dramatic change, and in fact to the negative. So how do we interpret this? We can't just say, well, polls, we can't trust polls. Well, that should have been across the board. If we can't trust polls, then dismiss it. But if we're going to discuss what this poll potentially signifies, what it potentially alludes to, what it potentially points up, that is what we're interested in. How do we interpret that if we choose to interpret it?
Well, I'm
points
not making
well taken. I do not disagree with essentially with anything you said. I think you've made very strong points. But on the philosophical matter, I think, of what are polls supposed to do, what do they exist for, how are they used, but that is not our targeted question today. We're still talking about an established fact by a polling agency that in updating a question about Trump finds a dramatic increase in disapproval. That is significant. We can discuss that without one way or the other liking polls or not liking polls. That's my point. Thank you so much, though. You made excellent points. Excellent points. Bill from Brooklyn, what would you like to address? Because I have more
good
questions
afternoon.
I can put on the table.
Well, good afternoon, Teresa, and to the audience. And not to disparage the callers, but again, I always go back to folks not listening to directions, like my third grade teacher told me. And what we're pursuing here is a Socratic questioning, and I think it's a great exercise, and it really helps us to be disciplined about questioning, to kind of pursue kind of thoughts in many directions and for many purposes, and to really get us to think clearly. So having said that, I hope to answer clearly one of the questions that you've put out, and I'll let you choose which one you want to further discuss.
Oh, I have a lot. So if you can choose either of the ones that are in play, or I can certainly get to my list and rattle off another one.
Go with another one, because I think we've covered the other.
Okay, I take your instruction. All right. A young man who is a missionary,
yes,
is determined to proselytize among a group of people living in a remote island and living as their ancestors did 60, 80,000 years ago. They have a special dispensation in that they are protected by the government, in that their way of life is not to be messed with. They are to continue living the way they have been living.
Right.
Unfortunately, this includes some skirmishes with people who refuse to observe the laws that apply to the group, this distinct group. And there have been deaths. There have been violent skirmishes between the group and people who refuse to obey the law, which is to leave these people alone. The group is so adamant about being left alone that the governor that's overseeing this island where they are in the southeast, I should say, of India, off the coast of India.
Yes.
They've killed a couple of people. The records show that. But this young man goes to the extreme. He knows that what he is contemplating is illegal and unlawful. He knows that he's putting his life in jeopardy by attempting to make contact with this group and doing so in order to proselytize them and convert them to Christianity. And I should say his form of Christianity. He encourages a group of fishermen to take him not to the island, because that's certain death, but close enough where he can paddle his way to the island and hopefully begin a meaningful contact. So he pays off a couple of fishermen who knew that it was illegal to do this. It was wrong to do this. Mm-hmm. And when discovered, he paddled his way to shore. And he didn't live long after that.
Okay.
He was shot with bow and arrow. And the next time the fishermen saw him from offshore, he was mm-hmm. being dragged along the beach. His body appeared lit. Inhabitants of the island burying mm-hmm. him on the beach. Okay.
Right.
Here's the question.
Okay.
Was this murder?
Was it murder? No,
yes.
It was not. No.
Why would you say
not
so?
Murder. I'd say it because this young man, it's very unfortunate that he had such hubris to completely violate the law and the will of those so-called native peoples there, that he repeatedly visit that island in violation of the law, knowing the risk and knowing that those individuals, those persons there did not want him there and saw him as a threat. So he was in clear violation. He knew the consequences, and in that regard, he assumed all risk, and therefore, in my opinion, it certainly was not murder.
All that being the case, do the inhabitants of this island,
mm-hmm.
is it to be assumed that they are a law unto themselves?
I would say yes. They live on their island. Supposedly left alone by everyone. They have no outside so-called law or legal establishment that applies to them. The only law that applies to them is the protection that they get from, I believe, Indian government, which has put a barrier, so to speak, around that island and around those persons there. Preventing all others from interfering with them or approaching them or visiting them. And so there is no so-called law that they have that they need to respect or that they would have any knowledge to respect. And therefore, no, they're not subjected to any law aside from the laws that they use on them for themselves in their own habitat there.
But how is it that people could just decide whether they would obey what is commonly known as the law, especially regarding such grievous matters as murder?
Well, these individuals live in a natural state. They have no consciousness. They have no information about the outside world, about our so-called laws, and especially any laws that could be created to pertain to them. So they're in a state of a complete natural, won't say bliss by any means, but they are in a state of nature, and therefore the lives that they live there are exempt from any outside legal force. I mean, that island has not been occupied by an outside government that could establish any laws or regulations that they should abide by.
In fact, the Indian government has not yet figured out what to do about retrieving the body. They are terrified of even going to the island to get the body and bring it back. All right, so no crime has been committed here, in your view?
In my view, absolutely not. Nope.
Okay.
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that this individual wanted to proselytize his version, his brand of Christianity, and to see himself as, you know, almost a god in himself. And I did read about this story, you know, taking soccer ball and arriving and saying, you know, his name and, you know, Jesus loves them. And they, you know, that they have no use for that. They have no interest in that. So anyway, It's unfortunate, but...
He knew this going in. Well, thank you. Let's see what other people are thinking. Dee from Georgia. Was a crime committed here?
I'd like to try the poll question. I guess I can talk about the one you're talking about now. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Which one would you rather I talk about?
Which one, whatever you choose.
Okay, I'd like to talk about the polls because I've been thinking about it for a while.
All right.
I'm looking at it as if I was in journalism school back in the 60s, which tell you about my age. I don't look.
You're old like me.
Yes, ma'am. I was in journalism school in 1968, so, you know. But I don't look at the poll by itself. I look at some of the events that happened before the poll. And I think that the poll reflects the midterm elections. I think it reflects Trump's actions on the border. I think it might even reflect Trump's actions concerning GE closing down, things of that nature. All these negative things, and with the polls coming out 60% disapproval, I think it might signal to some Republicans that maybe some chinks is in this man's armor, and I would think they would be more emboldened to challenge him if they found out who majority was among the survey. Like, for example, if they could sort out Republicans only and see what they said about the polls, and if that was negative, popularity among the Republicans has dropped substantially, I think they might be more willing to stand up to him. I think they might be more willing to challenge him in 2020. And I think this would also put Trump in a panic attack. I mean, I read his book once, a book called Fear. And Trump does not like people to attack him. Trump does not like to be seen as one that's unpopular. So I think the poll says many things. I think also the election going on in Mississippi is big because right now I think the strongholds of the Republican Party are being challenged, and it's on Trump's watch that they're being challenged. Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, which are in the deep South, I think they should be winning by a larger margin. But what's happened is they've been challenged, and they're squeaking through. And all of this is on Trump's watch, and he wants to be one to be seen as almost like a god. So I think in that instance, the polls are saying to everybody, well, maybe there's a chink in this man's armor. Maybe those who's for him are kind of sliding away. That's what I think.
Well, guess what? You win the prize. You win the prize. You gave us an excellent interpretation of what people would just consider a poll. But you took us along some facts here that put together we see emerging an entirely different view. These are not just numbers. You're telling us that it is possible that, in fact, as you say, a chink in the armor. It has confirmed that. Whatever people think about polls, at least this is the way you interpret it, which was an excellent interpretation. The president is vulnerable. He is running scared. The Republican Party itself is reacting to this poll, so there would be some internal problems there that they will have to deal with, especially coming off of the midterms and heading toward 2020. They've gotten early notice, or early enough notice, that they've got a lot of work to do to win back or to just win the trust of voters and the American people. He did an excellent job.
Thank you.
And that's why I'm so happy to be in your company. You did a great job. And that's how we are supposed to interpret things. Not just that we get some numbers or figures and we stop there. We go the next leg of the race and we interpret the meaning of things. Thanks so much for joining me today. That brings us to the end of our program. More tomorrow. Listen, we are about to embark on some very serious revelations. And let's start tomorrow. Bye-bye.